All right, let's go.
Flip over to my monitor, if you would, and I'm going to talk about defining an effective end-to-end software development lifecycle. Now, I'm going to apologize up front because there's a couple places where I'm going to soapbox. I'm going to stand up on a little soapbox and give my opinion, if you will, to some of these, but aligned to the exam and aligned to what my experience with the exam was and what my experience in studying for the exam has been. So I'll want to make sure that we cover these things in enough detail. Mm-hmm. So for my topics, this module overview, I'm going to talk about understanding the value of an end-to-end view of ALM, both the tools and the practices. This is really a mindset discussion. Go into the benefits of fast feedback, mm-hmm. talk a little bit about that, implementing strategies to reduce end-to-end cycle time. Again, a critical component that we'll talk to again and again and again throughout this. And then strategies to improve software quality. Finally, we'll jump into strategies to reduce waste and creating a process improvement plan. Let's start off. One quick thing. I want to just throw out some tips. This section is all about mindset. Having the right mindset will get you through a lot of this topic. So rather than focus on individual specific details which may or may not be on the exam, I think it's important that you get the right mindset. The questions are all really mindset in this area. So when you get questions here, the answers are going to be thinking about things from reducing cycle time, eliminating waste, end-to-end quality, and those sorts of things. So I want to make sure that it's the mindset focus here, mm-hmm. not going to be talking about tools or that sort of a thing. So the first section is understanding the value of an end-to-end view of application lifecycle management tools and practices. I'm going to start off. Here's what the study guide says. This is when you go and you pop up the web page, here's what they expect you to be studying. Understanding that an observable problem may be indicative of a more general process issue. In other words, go find the root cause for crying out loud. Don't just put band-aids on things. That's an important topic. And then explaining the difference between optimizing the part and optimizing the whole. And you can optimize the part while slowing down delivery of your entire team. And that's something that people don't realize. But making your developers 20% more productive may mean that you don't deliver any more code. In fact, it could mean you deliver less code as long as you don't, if you're not paying attention to the overall flow. So let's start with just a tool-based work item, traceability, and flow. I just want to discuss and remind people how Team Foundation Server ties everything together. If we start from the coder perspective in development, there's a change set, code that's checked in, and those are related to builds. So we group change sets, we group code into automated builds, and those builds occur, and they're labeled. Now those change sets, when I check them in, are related to tasks, some type of task type work item. This starts to reach into the project management world. Those tasks are related to product backlog items, which are related to test suites. And I'll be talking more about this in the quality section, and then you'll be diving in a lot more detail in a bit mm-hmm. when we talk about quality. Those test suites are part of test plans and are made up of sets of test cases. And test plans, again, tie back to builds. Test cases are run during automated tests, and all these things are captured and traced back to one another. Code reviews, you mentioned, very important piece, and they attach to change sets. Mm-hmm. And storyboards are a way we can get really quick feedback on ideas we have. And both of those tie back to your stakeholder engagement, really reaching back and getting feedback from your stakeholders. Now, why I want to show this entire traceability is because when we talk about end-to-end ALM, we're not talking about a bunch of separate silos where data is tracked across a lot of different applications. We need to be talking about a central repository for that data where we can dive in and get really valuable interrelated data. One of the things that I love showing is I can show when I move from one build to a new build all of the manual tests that were impacted by changes in that code. That's a really powerful thing. And the only way that we can get that type of power is by this type of traceability. So So I want to just set that groundwork. And now let's talk about the broader vision. As we're developing software, we can break things into maybe three main areas: the stakeholders and your users, development and testing, and operations. And as we look at the flow of development, we find that there's a ton of impediments that get in our way. Things like misunderstood requirements. How often as a developer, you code up a bunch of stuff, you throw it over the wall, users get their hands on it, and they come and they say, wow, that's good work. Mm-hmm. Not quite what we were looking for. Not quite what we asked for. Let's go back and try one more time.
And how much does that undermine the morale of the team? They put their heart and soul into building something like this. To say, this is great. We're really proud of the work we've done. We've tested it all. Time for a pat on the head, please.
Yes.
And no, we don't get it.
And you don't get it because of those misunderstood requirements.
Exactly.
Now, here's the kicker. I can misunderstand the requirement, but if I can get feedback from you almost immediately, solved.
Yes.
Because I haven't poured my heart and soul into that solution that you were talking about. I've maybe done a PowerPoint storyboard, gotten feedback from you on the workflow, and you say, nah, that's not it. So these are things that get in our way and stop us from delivering quickly. Things like churn in requirements, unmet user expectations and the like. And then we move from development, definition, into development, into operations, and places in operations where we can't get actionable feedback, or we've got management tools in IT that really don't match with what we have available for us in the dev world. And then that mismatch causes all sorts of difficulties. These are the things, not just these things, mm-hmm. but many of these things get in our way and block us from delivering software. A lot of times, these are self-inflicted barriers. I don't know how many companies I work with where the testers are on a different floor than the developers, potentially a different country,
mm-hmm.
but
yes.
Heaven forbid, in a different country. But even a lot of times, a different floor is enough to set that barrier between them. The barrier between users and development is even bigger. This is huge. And between what we do in the development world and passing it over to IT, sometimes I think we're talking two completely different languages. Now, all this results in things like increased cycle times. They will slow down our delivery. Increased costs from rework, from a ton of things like that. Dissatisfied users, dissatisfied stakeholders, dissatisfied dev teams.
Mm-hmm.
And these are things that really bring us down. And then I think a key one is coming back to the business and saying, we are losing valuable business opportunities here. Because we weren't able to deliver something successfully in a quick, tight thing, we don't get learning from it, and we can't come back rapidly and adjust course. If we can get these teams without barriers, if we can break down these barriers, we get this idea of continuous value delivery. And for this exam, I want you to burn this into your mind. This is the important thing. Continuous value delivery, tearing down walls, mm-hmm. delivering quickly. We want to get from ideation to working software, to software in production, to actionable feedback into this really tight loop. And we're going to take that tight loop and we're going to drive it faster and faster and faster and faster and faster and faster and faster until potentially we can get to continuous value delivery to our customers. This is a key thought for this exam and for the Microsoft tools. We're looking to improve cycle time, improve quality, and deliver quickly and reliably. How do you do that? Tear down the walls. Get rid of the barriers. All right, what does that give you? Team without barriers, that gives you, the integration, the traceability, the collaboration, those fast cycle times. That delivers continuous value. Those are the areas you need to focus on, and that gives you faster time to market. It gives you the ability to balance agility with quality in an educated way. Cost reduction, revenue growth, what all the companies that I work with are searching for.
Mm-hmm.
Ecstatic users, which I think is also important. I'll throw ecstatic devs in there too, and ecstatic testers, because I think this is key to bring it back to the team. And then realizing those opportunities we have for value.
Mm-hmm.
Anything you want to throw into that slide before we continue?
No, I think that was fantastic. You really did get on that soapbox, didn't you?
I love this part. This is the I really want to stress that this particular exam really does bring together kind of the feeling and the theories in the software development world that have been evolving from, you know, the Agile Manifesto 10 years ago, and what Scrum was its 20th year anniversary a while
amazing?
Back. Yeah, it's all these ideas that have been bubbling and fermenting, they're coming to a head now, and the way we deliver software today is effectively an Agile delivery practice. And there are some one-offs, and the tool can support things like waterfall development, et cetera. But those are the one-offs. Those aren't the normal day-to-day development that people strive for. Let's talk about the benefits of fast feedback. From the exam prep, this is what it says. Explain the importance of fast feedback in related to communicating requirements and to getting early customer feedback. Now, that to me ties really directly to PowerPoint storyboarding and the feedback client. And we're going to dive into those later. I'll pop those up a little bit. But I think there's a more general feedback. The benefits of fast feedback is more general. So I may be measuring something and then adjusting. And that's a nice fast feedback loop. I measure, adjust. You know, if it gets too warm in here, the air conditioning kicks on. If it gets too cold in here, the heat kicks on. You know, those types of relatively fast feedback loops keep me comfortable here in the studio. If, however, you put in a large delay, it can mess you up. Okay. A few days ago, I was traveling down to Southern California, and I was in a hotel. And it was the morning. I got up, took off all my clothes, turned on the shower, and waited. Wasn't quite right. Turned it up a little bit. Still too cold. Turned it up. Still too cold. Meanwhile, I'm starting to get cold. So it's still too cold, right? Finally, I get it. Ah, it's just right. I hop in the shower. Boom! The thing is frying, and I'm back out of the shower. It was one of those old showers with that long feedback loop. It took me about 5 minutes to get the shower at the right temperature where I could really get in it. That delay caused a lot of inefficiency in my personal getting ready for work time. It's magnified a million times when you get into work and into the software development process. Those delays in feedback will slay you. Let's give an example, maybe more from software development. If you've got some construction folks here, these are developers, and some testers over here inspecting, and the developers crank something out and hand it off, pass it to the testers, and the testers then validate it immediately, and then while the developers are working on the next thing, it might be maybe a 2-day cycle for them to get feedback. That's pretty fast. Now, you being a Scrum fan, you'll say 2 days for feedback. No way we should be waiting that long, right? We want to be even faster, but for this example, here we are at 2 days of feedback. Not too shabby. My developers aren't so far removed from their code that they can't remember what they were doing. But let's take a little different approach. Let's take our test team and pull them to the side. They're not going to start writing tests until the code is done, right? So the developers, meanwhile, are developing a queue. Build every 2 days. They build a new piece of software, and they build this nice queue. And finally, the testers take a look at the queue and start working through it. That's a 10-day feedback. By this time, the developers are probably in a different sprint.
Absolutely.
You know, now they're just completely out of the loop, working on a completely different topic. The change process that has to go through their brains is too big to effectively go back to coding that.
Because humans don't switch context overly well. So if you're asking your development team to go in there and just switch context, so, hey, this is done, we pass that off. We put it into the queue you're talking about, and then we move on to the next thing. We move our mindset onto the next task. We start focusing there, and the testers are off doing their work. When that comes back to us, the testers are saying, well, hang on, this is wrong, and you've got to change this. It takes us back out of the zone. We've then got to re-acclimatize our thinking to that particular piece of work. Now, that context switching is incredibly time-consuming, and as humans, well, we don't do it as well as we might think we can. So I think that's a really, really valid point you're making there, Steve.
I think so too. It's a good point. And I want to take it one step further and talk a little bit about the testers, because it's not just the developers that are impacted by these queues. Probably the testers are sending things back into a dev queue. And now by the time the bug is fixed and it's passed back to the tester doesn't remember how they should be testing it either. So this kind of back and forth is very, very expensive. And we'll be talking about process improvement later in the day. But here's a key thing to take away now. Find those queues. Find delays. Those are indicative of the problems you're running into. Find them, find the root cause, and get rid of them. That will get you a long way towards improving your process, most importantly, but also to having the right mindset to clearing this exam with no problems.
Great.
Some problems with slow feedback. You know, that long time between code and bug fix we've talked about, between the bug find and bug fix validation makes it harder for the tester. There's a lot of increased complexity to that, a lot more context switching, and really lowers your overall productivity. People think, no, I'm much more productive if I create these big batches for testing. I want my testers to be so productive, so I'm going to wait till all of the development is done, and then we'll just do it in 1 3-month big batch test. Mm-hmm. That actually is not more effective for the testers. It's not more effective for the developers, and it dramatically will slow your overall delivery. So I want to talk those two tools, just introduce them, the PowerPoint storyboarding and the feedback client. Those are two tools that I believe you will need to pay attention to for this exam. And here's an example of a PowerPoint storyboard. It's simply a mock-up. It's a way to take your ideas and the workflow and throw it into PowerPoint and be able to see kind of what it might look like. Now, a picture's worth 1,000 words.
Of course it is.
In a way. Another soapbox, if I may.
Of course.
You know, we have to care about older software development methodologies, and what we used to do were these big design documents. And I think it's important that we don't lose sight of those big design documents. They're part of the way a lot of companies still develop software. So regardless of the fact that they may slow down the delivery, we need to pay attention to those. But over the past few years, we've moved to this very lightweight user story idea. User stories are like, they fit on a 3x5 card, confirmation, they have acceptance criteria, and they're this invitation to a conversation. That's this kind of discussion type thing. And I think we may have lost something. When we moved that far down, we might have lost the value of these really lightweight mock-ups, these sketches that used to be in those giant requirements documents. Now, granted, you had to pile through 200 pages to find them, but we're starting to swing back to say, maybe it doesn't have to fit on a 3x5 card. Maybe a mock-up would be a really valuable thing because a picture really does say 1,000 words. We move to the feedback client. This is problematic across the board for almost every single dev team that I've ever worked with. And that's getting effective feedback rapidly. And the feedback client is it is such an amazing tool that I recommend that companies that don't do software development at all go sign up for a TFS preview account simply so they can get access to the feedback client, or Visual Studio Online, I guess.
Do you know what I really, really like about this is it allows you to go in there and ask for very directed feedback. So as a development team, we're very invested in delivering exactly what the customer wants. So if we go out there and say, well, hey, customer, what do you think? And we just throw this software out there. If you ask for general feedback, you're going to get general feedback. Oh, yeah, it's okay, it's good. But that's not enough. That's not what we're really looking for.
No.
What I really like about that feedback client is you can say, well, look, I'm looking for feedback on this particular feature and this, and here's some steps. We've changed the logon process. So here's how to go and open the web application. Here's how and who we want you to log on as. And we can walk you through exactly the experience and then ask directed questions. Did you like the positioning of it? Did you like the way that we hide this when you're not authenticated?
Yeah.
So they do all of those kinds of things. So good quality, direct feedback is, you know, gives you good quality directed answers. I think I love that tool as well.
Yes.
Yeah, good tool.
It is a fantastic tool. I'll rave about it some more as time goes by, but we're going to be covering this in more detail later on in the day. So let's talk about some concrete strategies to reduce end-to-end cycle time. This is one of my favorite topics, because if you get this mindset right, a lot of the rest of it will flow out. The rest of this exam will flow right out of this mindset. We want to implement strategies to reduce our end-to-end cycle time. This is idea to internet, or whatever, you know, getting it out to, you know, the ideation to production. We want to identify bottlenecks in the delivery process. We need to understand this relationship. There's a tight relationship between the amount of stuff that we're working on and our cycle time. That's a very important thing. And I'll probably spend about 5 slides, 10 slides on that. It's important.
Huge.
I know. They'll go quick. And then we want to talk about some metrics that identify or highlight these bottlenecks. And finally, creating potential solutions when we can, and so that we can measure them, right? Taking those metrics and applying them, trying to get rid of some of these bottlenecks, and then seeing what we can do to answer that. So identifying bottlenecks. I'm going to go right to the cumulative flow diagram, because it explicitly, graphically will show you when you have a bottleneck. So if I look at this very simple one, you know, off on the far right, I've got my deployed code. I've got on the far left my ready to start code. And then in between there, I've got the stuff I'm working on. And I can look at things, and these bands, these red bands, the yellow band, and the green band all really tell me what am I doing, how long does it take to do it, how many things am I working on, and most importantly, are there bottlenecks? And if you look at this particular diagram, you're going to find there are no real bottlenecks. This is a nice continuous flow.
You know what else I like about this? It's a rainbow. I think as another non-tangible benefit, such a chart on the wall, Steve, would have to make the workplace better. I mean, have a look at the colors you've got on that chart.
I think you're absolutely right.
I think the team should say, so how's the rainbow chart going, Steve?
Absolutely. Cumulative flow diagram, that's a dry name for this.
Absolutely.
I like
rainbow diagram
chart.
That's going to take off.
Yeah, I think so. So how do you find if there's a bottleneck in here? Well, if you look at this, for instance, in testing, this yellow band, if all of a sudden it starts getting wider and wider and wider and wider, what that means is your developers are piling stuff into your testers, but your testers aren't getting it through for ready for buy-off, ready for approval. So anytime you see a swelling in one of these bands, you have a problem. If you get rid of the ready to start or the deployed, often they'll just lay like fingers across the bottom. I think it was called a finger chart in Lean. And those finger charts, you don't want one finger to be fat, right? Or have big, you know, arthritic knuckles. So what you really want in that case is this nice continuous flow. That's how you make that, how you can find those bottlenecks. There are other ways. Look for cues. Anytime you find a cue, you have a bottleneck. It almost by definition, if you have a cue, you have some type of bottleneck. Now, can you get rid of all of your cues? No. We live in a world of software development and software testing and software delivery where there's a lot of variation in the amount of time it takes for any one piece of work to get done. One may take one day, one may take two. And that variation needs to be buffered by some cues. But most people have very large cues, and you can really reduce the amount of cues. So this is a demo, but it's not a demo of the tool. It's more of a slideware demo. Mm-hmm. And it's the relationship between work in process and cycle time. And I'm going to take you through a cumulative flow diagram.
Oh. Where'd the colors go?
I know. They're coming. Some are coming. They're not going to be rainbowy, though. Up the upper left-hand side, I have the number of work items that I'm working on, the things I'm working on. They could be user stories. Mm-hmm. They could be tasks. They could be epics. They could be requirements. They could be whatever. And across the bottom, we've got time flowing. And over time, you know, I start off with a greenfield project, and over time, I'm assigned more work. I'm gradually assigned more and more and more work as these requirements get built and assigned to the development team. And then at some point in the future, I'm going to start delivering this work. So everything between the assigned work and the completed work is my work in process. Okay? This is the work that I'm working on. I was assigned the work. I've started working on it, but I haven't yet completed it. So it's my work in process. That work in process, if we take a vertical line and draw it anywhere near a point in time, we can get our work in process for that day. Now, let's say that our work in process is here. We can then draw a horizontal line. Well, that's very, very nice. And we can draw a horizontal line that will show the average lead time. This is the average amount of time it takes once I start working on something to deliver it. Mm-hmm. Is that clear?
It is, yes.
Okay. So once we do that, let's pick out some numbers. Let's say that we've got 6 items. Those might be product backlog items. They might be user stories or requirements. We're working on 6 of these things, so our average lead time might be X, which right here. We've got our average lead time. Maybe 2 weeks, call it. We're going to make an executive decision to limit the work in process. This is the CEO walking in and saying, all right, you guys, y'all are working on 6 things. It's too much. Stop it now. The first person who starts item number 4 gets fired. 3 items until they're done. We just make an executive decision. If we do that, our WIP is now constrained to be only 3 items tall. That means what used to be this red band now becomes this green band. And that green band can never be more than 3 items taller than our completed work line. Because that's the law, the executive law. What does that do to our lead time, our cycle time? Our average lead time decreases fairly substantially, assuming that we're going up and to the right, that we're not losing features as we develop, right? Which would be crazy. So our average lead time decreases dramatically. Now, here's the kicker that I find. This is done through a decision that management makes. You taking this exam, this is your role. Your role is to understand these decisions and how these decisions impact cycle time. Now, you can deliver faster cycle time a million different ways. You can send all of your developers to some, you know, fantastic training. You can send all of your testers to some place where they're going to get some great new tool and learn how to use it. You can build better requirements. All these are better ways, are ways to deliver faster. But they're really incremental changes. It's hard to bend that curve up onto how much you can deliver. Limiting work in process, on the other hand, deciding to work on less and focus on it until it is done is almost a free and easy way to get faster cycle time. Did I say easy? Mm-hmm. Politically, it's hard. Technically, it's trivial. Politically, it's very difficult. That's your job. You're taking this exam so you can prove to the world that you understand this relationship and that you can make that case for the executives.
But see, if I was to hear that sort of thinking, as you've said that we, I think in an earlier slide, you spoke about the need to have the, or the wish, to have those testers nice and busy. So the developer's mindset was, let's get all this work done, let's build up a queue, and let's say, you know, we want them busy, whoomp, that's going to keep them real busy. So how do you overcome that kind of thinking? I mean, if we want to keep productivity high, people think you just force more work in. Now, if we put lots of things in here, that's going to be lots of things over there. No one's going to have any time not to be productive.
You are absolutely right. This is the crazy part of the way we focus on productivity, like you
that's
mentioned.
Right.
And we're measuring productivity, and if we measure productivity by utilization, how busy are my devs? Are they constantly working and my testers are constantly testing? If you're measuring productivity by how busy people are, You push in work until everyone's really busy. And that will slow your cycle time because it increases your work in process. Don't measure utilization. Measure productivity a different way with throughput. So if you measure throughput versus utilization, you come up with an entirely different development environment where you're building things and getting it out the door very, very quickly. One thing I love about Scrum Mm-hmm. It just flat out says, y'all's working in a two-week cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can't get it done in a two-week cycle, you didn't get it done. So the testers have to be working very tightly with the developers. And it helps take away that focus on utilization and helps it focus on delivery of value. Kanban does the same thing with a different type of visualization.
One of the things I've heard discussed like that is, if you want to get, let's say, heading downtown Seattle, if you want to get more people down there quickly, let's just push more and more people under the 520. How's that going to work?
Right. You know,
more people, we're definitely going to get them there quicker.
You've all been in those parking lots, right?
Oh, yes,
where
yes.
You're just sitting there on the road, and you can just visualize your traditional project manager looking at people standing out there smoking or whatnot, and he's looking there going, ah, there's a spot for a car, quick, yes. Get another car in there.
And that person's not busy, yeah, you're right.
Exactly.
Push.
In freeways, mm-hmm. capacity, how much your utilization, how full your freeway is correlated with throughput up
yes.
to a point, and then when you reach about 70% utilization, your throughput starts to decline. We want to be focusing on throughput. It's the same argument that you find inside of software development teams. It's remarkable how well those two things apply. All right, my 2 minutes of math, this is Little's Law.
Mm-hmm.
Your delivery rate, how you deliver, that slope, is equal to your work in process divided by your lead time. That implies that your lead time is equal to your work in process divided by your delivery rate. It's simple algebra. Why I care about that is because work in process is a leading indicator of your cycle time. It's a leading indicator, not a lagging indicator. We have a lot of lagging indicators in software development. Velocity of your team, that's a lagging indicator. How much did you do before? And you don't know that you're going to be doing less in this next sprint until the sprint is over. Watching your work in process, however, is a leading indicator. And that's a critical thing for both for this test and a thing to know about. So how do you do this? What are the metrics for identifying bottlenecks? Your leading indicators are your queue sizes and your batch size. Batch size being, are we trying to do 25 requirements all at once to push to production, or are we trying to do 5? And how big are those requirements? And queue sizes is the number of those requirements. We have to pay very close attention to those two things. Mm-hmm. Lagging indicators are things like velocity. I think they're important to gather. They're important to watch for. But they're not forward-looking. So they're a little less valuable. And there's some other metrics that I find are useful. Things like rework costs, your bug trending, those sorts of things. How much of time are you spending on failure demand, you know, versus usable value customer demand? Those are key for identifying bottlenecks simply because they feed back rework. And that's something we want to watch for. We'll get more into that when we're talking about waste. I think the key thing, pay attention to queues. Everywhere you see a queue, jump on it and watch it like a hawk. Very, very close attention to queues. That's another little soapbox of mine, but it's important because it gives you this mindset for looking at what it takes to deliver effectively. Some strategies to improve software quality. We're going to go relatively quickly through some of these because we're going to cover it in more depth later. So we want to identify the process steps that introduce defects. We want to be able to identify those, understand the quality process end to end, and bring those quality efforts up early in the development lifecycle, including your testers. Here's how things are broken, right? Conventional QA can be broken. We define requirements as these, you know, BRDs, functional specs up front. Then we break them down and we move over and we write some code. Then we pass it to the testers and they manually test everything. And then they pass it to the users who do their user acceptance testing. Finally, it gets to deployment and we find out that, oh, shoot, this thing doesn't scale or whatever. This is, you see this process. It's this waterfall delivered process giving you this late engagement of stakeholders and increased cycle times. It's hideous and bad. So what we want to do is we want to take quality and push it right up to the beginning. Acceptance tests and acceptance criteria. Drive those home. Let developers know what those are. Development needs to be doing continuous acceptance testing. We're going to move that into testing and production, and mean time to repair. That's what MTTR is, mean time to repair, reduction. We're going to try to reduce the overall mean time to repair. We'll come back to that metric later and talk a little bit more in depth. By pushing quality up front and making it everyone's responsibility, you ensure that you can deliver faster and faster and faster. What types of things are in our testing toolbox? Towards the bottom, some of the key automated testing that you want to put in place. Unit testing, integration testing, performance testing, load testing. Get those things in the box early. Mm-hmm. Load testing early? What? Absolutely. Get even your load tests up there. As we move up the stack, we might be hitting things more from now, not just at the code level, but maybe up a little bit higher at the UI level. We'll still want to automate here some keyword testing and performance testing at the UI level, and then go up to some manual testing where we're doing this ad hoc explorations. And we want to be able to do all of that in the context of this very rapid continuous delivery cycle. How do you reduce waste? Waste reduction it's tough. It's tough to know. You know it when you see it, but sometimes even then you don't know it right. You might get it wrong still. So we need to identify wasteful activities, create strategies to eliminate them, and then measure that effectiveness. And so what is waste? Now I pulled the lean definition of waste because there's not seven nice ones here and I just kind of lined them up, right? There's inventory, incomplete work. If you have taken a branch somewhere in your code and you've done a bunch of development on it for 3 months and it is not in production, that's probably waste. Mm-hmm. You need to get that stuff into production. Overproduction is another key lean waste. Building too much of something, in our case in software development, these are rarely used features. Processing is another waste. This looking for data or building a bunch of unneeded documentation. Transport, we have handovers, context switching. Excessive motion is also this context switching idea. Waiting, biggest one in software development, is this large batches, it's these delays that happen. And then probably the second biggest is rework due to defects. And those are bugs that we find.
So it's an enormous list of waste things there. I mean, are we really that wasteful in your experience?
Yes.
That's unfortunate.
Hugely, hugely wasteful. It's a very difficult argument to make without data. But with TFS, you have data. Mm-hmm. And so one of the wastes, this waiting delay waste, for an example, we can measure the touch time, how long someone's actually working on something, versus the lead time, how long did it take to get delivered. Mm-hmm. And what we find in most high-performing teams, this is scary, high-performing agile teams, their touch time is still less than 20% of the overall lead time. That means they're working on something for maybe 8 hours, but it's taking 2 weeks to deliver. Mm-hmm. That's a pretty nasty, like that would be a 10% effectiveness of touch time to lead time. In teams that are just kind of getting by with an ad hoc process, very common for touch time to be less than 1% of lead time. Very common. And that is a massive amount of delay and waste. So yes, we are that wasteful.
Wow.
That's why the philosophy behind this exam and this exam is so important to drive home this elimination of waste can make us all better developers, better team members, and deliver better software. Anything you see in this circle that slows you down, it's a waste. Just flat out figure out how to get rid of your conflicting priorities. Dang it, prioritize. Get a prioritized backlog.
Excellent. Let me jump in for a sec, Steve.
Yes.
So I just wanted to remind folks as well, just to keep an eye out on the polls.
Mm-hmm.
And just wanted to remind you to make sure you can select those best answers for us. Those polls are really, really insightful and very helpful. So sorry to interrupt you there, Steve. I just wanted to remind the audience that as well.
That is a good point. We really appreciate those answers on those polls. They can help us do better.
Mm-hmm.
Help us prioritize and get rid of some misunderstood requirements as well, right?
Lovely.
Dealing with waste. How do you find waste? Look for bottlenecks. Look for bottlenecks. Look for delays. Anytime you find a delay that something's sitting in a queue, look backward, find the root cause. Probably waste. Not always, but probably waste. For eliminating waste, it's the consultant's answer. It depends. This is a very huge topic. If you can't write a good, detailed question to put on an exam that has an unambiguously correct answer, you won't put that question on the exam. And this is one that's filled with ambiguity. But focus on these key things, continuous improvement and continuous cycle time reduction. Those are your key areas. Key metrics, cycle time reduction, rework costs, and bug counts. Pay attention to those. Okay, last one, creating a process improvement plan. This is another one of those where there's a lot of discussion in the industry about how do you most effectively create a process improvement plan.
Do I have to hide your soapbox now?
I won't do it this time. I won't soapbox. And I won't soapbox because, dang it, there's so many good ideas out there. People have brilliant ideas from the lean world, from the agile scrum world, from the Kanban world. I would argue that some of the people back in waterfall days have thought through some of their problems pretty deeply and may have a key nuggets that we can grab and bring into our process improvement. So because of that, I'm going to keep this light.
All right.
Because it's very difficult to write exam questions that specifically say, is it better to have a 2-week sprint or a 1-week sprint or a 4-month sprint?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it depends, right?
It does.
But we do need to think about these things, creating strategies for driving organizational change and creating that consensus for the change. I won't talk about those two. Those are a lot of human emotion pieces that are critical for change management. I'm just going to redirect you off to, you know, John Cotter or some of the good books on change and really drive you to those. But we do need to talk about key metrics for an improvement effort. Here's a few. Business value. That's why we're delivering software. Driving business value, whether to our customers, whether to ourselves, however you measure that value, even if you're a nonprofit. Lowering rework costs. Can we eliminate defects from coming back in and causing us rework? Probably not, but we can drive them down. Cycle time. How fast can we deliver something? That's a key metric for your process improvement. Bug trends. Queue sizes and batch sizes, all things that I really want you to kind of stick in your mind to remember that these are some of the things that you can measure to know when you're reaching an improvement in your development lifecycle. Some best bets. Go visit this visualstudio.com WAC ALM site. There's some good funny videos on there. Who knows? We may play one at the end of the day. I don't know. But it's got an overview of the theory and how it aligns with Visual Studio. Again, mindset. When you're taking this exam, constantly be thinking on reducing cycle time, speeding feedback, small batch sizes, breaking down barriers between teams, fast communication, fast back and forths, minimally viable products, shipping small batch sizes, getting something out, getting some value from it, and then building quality in throughout the entire life cycle.
Mm-hmm.
If you know just that part, if you walk away with just that knowledge and look through that lens on every question, you've gone a long ways towards getting the right answers. And as a side note, if you're not convinced that that's the right way to improve your process and that the faster cycle time with high quality is not the most important thing, then by all means, fake it when you take the test. Just flat out fake it. Learn a little bit about the storyboarding and feedback client tools. I think they're important as well.
Fantastic. I've got a question for you.
Yes.
Can I go and get a coffee?
Absolutely.
Is that subtle?
Yeah, that is. That is. This is one of those things that people might consider wasteful, right? Because we're taking a break from this training piece, but it's not. You have to look at the big picture, right?
Absolutely.
Having you caffeinated, having me caffeinated, and the people attending caffeinated might help us learn more and deliver faster.
Fantastic. We'll see you back here in 10 minutes.
Sounds good.